Welcome to Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. As you've probably seen on social media, today is Giving Tuesday. It's an annual event that encourages everyone to give today to their favorite charities. Here at Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, we'd really appreciate your support. And here's the great news. Because of a special matching grant just for today, any gift you give will be matched dollar for dollar. So if you give $5 today, it'll be doubled to $10. If you give $50, it becomes $100, and so on. Now, we can't do what we do to provide biblical strength and encouragement to families without your help. So thanks for being our partner today on Giving Tuesday. Give securely online at drjamesdobson.org, or you can dial 877-732-6825.
Today on Family Talk.
Well, hello again, everybody, and welcome to Family Talk. I'm your host, Dr. James Dobson. 52 weeks out of the year, it's a pleasure coming before you, and we have a special treat for you today. Last month, we had our annual gathering event. That's what we call it, the gathering. It took place here in Colorado Springs, and one of our keynote speakers was President Trump's former chief advisor, Steve Bannon. And I wanted to bring you part of his speech today. Mr. Bannon shared about his experience in the momentous 2016 campaign. He also gave a stirring report on the current state of our economy and how our country can dig itself out of the financial pit it's fallen into in the past decade or many decades. We've been spending more money than we brought in for a long, long time. Mr. Bannon formerly served in the Navy as an engineer, then became an investment banker and graduated from Harvard Business School. And now he is the executive chairman of Breitbart News. He's a very informed man and a true patriot, and I hope you will learn something, regardless of your political views, from what he has to say. I can tell you this, our audience at the gathering was mesmerized by Steve Bannon. Let's take a listen.
To everything, there's a season. And a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to rend, a time to sow, a time to keep silence, a time to speak out. A time of war, a time of peace. There's a war going on in our country between the progressive left and ourselves. But more importantly, there's a civil war going on between the permanent political class in Washington, D.C., and the grassroots organizations throughout this country. You all didn't ask for this civil war. It was foisted upon you. I saw this up close and personal when I stepped into the Trump campaign. You know, I've been working as a populist and an economic nationalist and a conservative for many years, trying to build this movement. And on mid-August of 16, the Trump campaign was in total disarray and about to collapse. He was 16 points down, double digits down in every battleground state. He was 70 on the generic ballot of Republicans. When you got to be at 90 to win, that means 9 out of every 10 registered Republicans in the country have to vote for you to be president. He was at 70. They'd never had a number that low. Because quite frankly, 30% of registered Republicans didn't think he was Republican. He had no money. There were 88 days to go. And I told him that day that we talked about me coming in and being the CEO of the campaign. I'd never worked in a political campaign, ever. Never been in a political campaign office, made some ads, but never put a commercial up, never ran a field, never did anything. But I knew an alliance could be put together very quickly between the RNC and ourselves, and particularly a field army of evangelical Christians and conservative Catholics in states like North Carolina and Florida, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Iowa. And I told him with 100-degree metaphysical certitude, you will win if you just follow this playbook. We're going to make her the tribune of a corrupt and incompetent elite. And you're the agent of change. And you're an agent of change of a few basic policies. Number one, we're going to stop mass illegal immigration, and we're going to limit dramatically legal immigration in this country to get our sovereignty back. Number two, we're going to bring manufacturing jobs back from China. And number three, we're going to get out of these pointless foreign wars that are bleeding us out throughout the world. You're also going to be the Tribune of Law and Order and the Supreme Court and judges and all of that. But on these themes, we can win. 7 weeks later, morning of the first debate, we were up 2 points. The debates kind of went sideways a little bit, as you all know. On Billy Bush weekend, the Republican establishment wanted to bail 100%. And I told them, I said, if you bail and you strip up Mike Pence and whoever you put in as VP, we're going to lose by 20 points. We're going to lose the House. We're going to lose the Senate. You're going to lose the Supreme Court for a generation. And I told them, as bad as the Billy Bush stuff was, Clinton was a sexual predator. And his wife enabled that. And his wife also represented people who had raped young girls, or in this case, a young girl, and destroyed her. What the Clintons did with their action was much worse than Trump did with his words. And what Trump did was not defensible. He never didn't try to defend it. And I told him that day, this is a decision point. Campaigns come down to this in the heat of the moment. I said, to 100% metaphysical certitude, you will win if you just stick to the playbook. 3.5 weeks later, we won because of that alliance. Now, the key that picked the lock in Florida, in North Carolina, in Pennsylvania, in Ohio, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Iowa, states we haven't won as a group in living memory, was because of the field army of the evangelical Christian community and conservative Catholics. I ran that campaign. I knew we were an island of misfit toys. We had no money almost the entire time. We had very little organization. It's absolutely a certitude to me that the hand of divine providence played the key role in that. And that's why that victory is everything. Our civilization is dying before our eyes, because the elites in our country have allowed it to die and have been an accelerant in its dying. If you look at the Persian Gulf, you've got an expansionist Persia, and you've got Turkey with Erdogan, who in 2021 is going to name an Ottoman caliphate on the 100th anniversary of the caliphate being unwound by Ataturk. In Europe, you've got sub-Saharan Africa and North Africa that's going to have a migrant crisis of biblical proportions that will ultimately destroy Western Europe. And then you have the United States. From the financial crisis of 2008, the world has increased its debt to $180 trillion. And that does not include the contingent liabilities of the United States government. Don't focus on the $20 trillion. It's the off-balance sheet. It's the net present value anywhere between $60 trillion and $200 trillion, depending on how you calculate it. We got ourselves out of the 2008 crisis very simply. We just turned on the liquidity. We just turned on the cash. We just floated back up the system. That's why if you own assets, if you own stock, if you own real estate, it's been the best eight-year run you've ever had. But if you're a working man or woman in this country, you have not had a real raise since 1972. During the hurricanes, they put out a study. 50% of the households in our country do not have $400 in cash if they had to buy a generator or something. I want to think about that for a second. 50% of the households in the United States of America in 2017 don't have $400 in cash for an emergency. What do you think the people at Valley Forge think about that? Guadalcanal. That's what we've allowed to happen on our watch, okay? We are all responsible for that. And there's a way out, and we can get out, but it's going to take the united effort of the evangelical Christian right and the Catholic conservatives to get us out. It's going to be the little guys to get us out of here, okay? The elites in this country have sold us out. And their day of reckoning is coming. This is the great fourth turning in American history. We had the Revolution, we had the Civil War, you had the Great Depression of World War II, and you have now. And this is going to take, like all these turnings, 10, 15, 20, 25 years to go through. We're either going to be the nation that was bequeathed to us from 12, 13, 14 generations, or we're going to be something vastly different. And you've seen the difference. You've seen the protests and the Columbus statues in New York City. You've seen the statue controversy. You've seen the kneeling for the national anthem. You've seen the beginning of it. Those two sides are irreconcilable. Now, I know we can win. I've seen it at Brexit. I've seen it at the Trump campaign in 2016. I see it in these candidates that we're now standing up. They're going to run against Republican establishment politicians. I've seen it in young people coming to us, want to be governors, want to be congressmen. You know, I'm a street fighter, and I'm proud of it. You know, I could do a lot of different stuff like Trump could do. I'm doing this because I have a duty to my country to do this. My daughter's a West Point graduate. She fought in Iraq with the 101st. She's an Army captain. Her generation could be the new greatest generation because of an entire country that's totally indifferent to their sacrifice and their suffering, except, oh, you know, thank you for your service, or a round of applause when they get on the planes. The country's totally indifferent to these wars that were strung out on from Afghanistan to Korea, totally indifferent to the sacrifice of these young men and women. She has 15 non-commissioned officers that report to her. I think the average of those men and women is something like 8 or 9 tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. We are facing a crisis today of the Judeo-Christian West. And it's upon your shoulders that we're going to get through this. But this is going to play out in the 18 election. It's going to play out in the 20 election. It's going to play out in the 2024 election. As the Federal Reserve has to start ratcheting up interest rates and getting off zero interest rates and liquidity, our economy is going to go through some massive bumps. It's one of the reasons that I have said from day one, we've got to form a populist wing of the Republican Party. And I'm a populist, I'm a nationalist, I'm a conservative. The reason populism is so important, the reason we must institute it today, is it takes decision-making down in the Christian concept of subsidiarity, to get decisions down, like in the early church, to the very most basic, lowest level where people can make decisions. And here's the reason. Not only do we have to today start to unwind all the destruction of globalization onto the nation state, and particularly the United States of America, as importantly, in the next 15, 20, 25 years, the convergence of biotechnology, the computer chip, and artificial intelligence, that convergence of which engineers call the singularity, is going to have decisions that are going to be made about the very nature of human beings, that we do not want a technocratic scientific elite in Davos, in Beijing, in London, on Wall Street, and in Silicon Valley making those decisions. The urgency for us to embrace populism and to start to force decisions down to the basic common decency of the men and women in this country. I told Value Voters today, if you gave me the choice of being governed by the first 100 people in that barn or the top 100 partners at Goldman Sachs, I would take the folks in that barn because their decency, common sense, tenacity, and grit is what this country's been made of. Now, I'm also a nationalist. I'm an economic nationalist. I believe what is in the best interest of the citizens of the United States of America is what comes first. Now, economic nationalism is what binds us together. What the opposition is trying to do is say we're ethno-nationalist. You know, when I took over Trump's campaign on that Monday when it was announced, Trump being down 16 points, Hillary Clinton not even campaigning anymore, if you remember back to August 15th or 16th. Everybody said, all the pundits, all the geniuses, you know, Trump knows he's in a death spiral, he's going to lose by 25 points. He's hired this mad bomber from Breitbart, and this guy's going to come in, and all he's going to do is destroy his enemies on the way down. This is vengeance, right? So we ran a highly disciplined campaign, and about 10 days later, the opposition, Clinton's campaign, realized they had to get her off the beach, and she had to respond to this, and they came up, and I was sitting in our control room with, you know, we had like 50 TVs, we had all our young people in there, the rapid response group, and I'm sitting there. She came to Reno and gave a speech, and on the thing I saw on CNN, it's ethno-nationalism, it's white supremacy, it's Breitbart, it's Bannon, it's alt-right. I said right there, I told everybody. I said, if she's going to do identity politics and we do economic nationalism and populism and conservatism, we've won. Economic nationalism is what binds us together. Doesn't matter what your race is or your gender or your religion or your ethnicity. Matters one thing, that you're a citizen of this country. If you're a citizen of this country, you have certain obligations, but you also have rights. And one of those rights is your job is not going to be sold out from under you and shipped over to China. The reason this we've drifted as conservatives over the last 30 or 40 or 50 years, we've allowed something, and I call it just like Marx thought, that human beings are nothing more than economic units of production and consumption. That everything was about the economy. It was GDP. Remember, everybody make a big deal the last 6 weeks for a presidential election. You got to look at the unemployment number. Got to look at the labor participation rate. That's going to drive the thing. Everything, it's about the economy, stupid. Right? It's all about the economy. We're not an economy. We're a culture and a society and a civic bond. But we lost that. We allowed that to drift. We allowed this whole concept that's all about the economy. It's not. In economic nationalism, I'm a capitalist. I'm a free market capitalist. But it's a subset. It's a substrate of what your society is. You know, one of the great things about the Tea Party movement, it brought up our founding documents, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, which people had not studied for a generation or two. And it got it back out there where people were talking about it and bringing the Constitution to rallies and learn about this. We're economic nationalists. We have another set of documents. Because the Constitution and the Declaration, they're legal documents. The Constitution is essentially a merger of equals with all it laid out, negotiated and formed by some of those brilliant lawyers this country's ever seen. But there's another set of documents. That's what economic nationalism is. The foundational documents was written by a young staff officer on General Washington's staff. In fact, it was General Washington's, the son he never had, Alexander Hamilton. Hamilton was with him the entire time, all 8 years of the Revolution. Saw him up close. Finally was allowed, after suffering at Valley Forge and all the other places, was finally allowed to go into combat at Yorktown. Hamilton, as Secretary of Treasury, wrote the Report on Manufactures, the very first document that Washington asked for. And it said the following: the Revolution, we're very lucky. If France had not come in as our partner, we wouldn't have won. And one of the reasons we didn't win, we couldn't have won, was we didn't have a manufacturing base to make the munitions. We couldn't defend ourselves. And so the Report on Manufactures said economic nationalism, the American system, you need three things. Number one, you need a manufacturing capacity to be a great and powerful nation. And number two, you need a financial institutions that just don't lend to real estate and other financial speculation. Because remember, most of the big money made in the United States in the early years was all real estate speculation and the financing of that. Hamilton said this has got to stop. You have to finance manufacturing production capacity. The third thing he said is we have to have massive infrastructure spending, roads and canals, bridges, that could bind this great continent together. It was the vision of Hamilton and Polk and Jackson and Henry Clay and Abraham Lincoln that made this a manufacturing powerhouse in the 19th century. And it's on that capital that we're still drawn upon today in the 21st century. It's that American system we have to get back to. That what is in the vital economic interest of the citizens of the United States of America is paramount. The Southern Poverty Law Center is way down the road of calling all of the groups that you represent and are part of hate groups. Well, I called them out today. What they don't talk about is all the corporate sponsors, all the corporatists, the Fortune 500 corporations that give them money, and all the foundations made off of all the, you know, billionaires that died years ago that have now become left-wing organizations. The economic hate crimes perpetuated upon the working class and middle class in this country are almost unspeakable. We've gutted, in one generation, the greatest manufacturing power in the history of mankind, and we've shipped it to China. China treats us as a tributary state. We are Jamestown to their Great Britain. We have a $400 billion a year trade deficit with them. It would be $600 billion a year, except we ship soybeans and cattle and pork and wheat and copper and oil and natural gas and timber and Boeing jets and Apple products. Oh, excuse me. We don't send Boeing jets and Apple products because in the last year, they've done joint ventures to make it over there. The forced technology transfer, the tribute that our companies have to pay to get to China, is $3.5 trillion in the last 10 years. They have stolen our innovation. They are a Confucian mercantilist model. And now they've built, if you've ever heard this concept, One Belt, One Road, where they're connecting all the countries of Central Asia to tie together in this, if you ever heard of Mackinder, the great geopolitical theorist that said, who controls the heartland of Asia controls the world island. Who controls the world island controls the world. It was Napoleon and Hitler, Peter the Great, they all knew that. Also, they've taken the Mahan strategy of naval. That's where everywhere in the world you go, Singapore, Djibouti, Oman, the Chinese are there. Following what the British and the Americans did. Their geopolitical expansion is breathtaking. And they're an enemy like we've never had before. I want to conclude tonight with the concept of Edmund Burke. Now, Burke's compact said that we owe as much to future generations as to those that came before us. That those that came before us deserve the same respect and care that we consider for our children and grandchildren. We're only going to get out of this on your shoulders. That's why I've taken the time to go to CMP and to Value Voters and to hear tonight when Dr. Dobson was so kind and courteous, gracious to invite me. I'm not a person that wastes time. I'm a practical person. And I like to win. We can win. And more importantly, we must win. Because the future of the Judeo-Christian West rests on your shoulders. And 100 years from now, they're going to look back at us. They're going to look back at this generation. They're going to look back at those that had the ability to do something about it. And what did they do? Now, I can tell you, because I've seen it from the inside, we can win. We can win this. It's just, do we have the toughness? Do we have the tenacity? Do we have the grit that those 13 generations that came before us did? And we're going to get this question answered. So tonight, when you pray for your country and for President Trump and his family and for the troops, pray for yourselves. Pray for yourselves that in future times, you will have stood up and answered the call.
What an insightful speech given by a man who played such a pivotal role in the 2016 election. If you'd like to learn more about Steve Bannon or Breitbart News, go to our website at drjamesdobson.org, and we'll have the links there. Thank you for listening to our program today. Won't you consider partnering with us here at Family Talk with your financial contributions? You know, this is the end of the year when the financial stability of most Christian organizations hang in the balance for the next year, 2018. Right now, through the end of this year, every dollar you're able to donate will be doubled by a generous matching grant. Go to drjamesdobson.org to contribute securely online, or you can call toll-free at 877-732-6825. That number again is 877-732-6825. I'm so grateful for your support and prayers for our ministry. I'm Dr. James Dobson, reminding you to join us next time for another edition of Family Talk. Have a blessed day.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.